Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley and Mike Gregg. This episode we will be discussing the 3-1 loss performed against Sunderland in the FA Cup on Tuesday night. We'll go through our opening thoughts on the match, our thoughts on the starting 11, and also all the key moments. We'll also be rating the players, the full manager, and yes, the ref. And also, cannot forget, we will be rating Sunderland as well. Almost forgot about Sunderland. Before we get going, I also have to welcome one of my co-hosts to my show. I believe this is David. How you doing?
Hi, Russ, and thanks for taking the time out to put this show on at my request, I guess, because I really feel we need to go through it and iron out what happened the other night, and for the guys who didn't get to see the game, discuss all the key points and stuff. And also thanks to Mike, of course, for agreeing to do it, because I think it's fair that we have a balanced view, because I was quite down on Kit the other night, and I think Mike less so, and so we need to debate, you know, the pros and the cons of everything that happened. I don't think it's not as black and white as Kit out or Kit in, but certainly it did for me. It raised the concerns, really, the way that we set up about the game and the way we went about it, and it was very, very disappointing. So I'm glad we got this chance to do this, and then we can put it behind us.
Absolutely. Listen, I look forward to going through this with you and Mike. Mike is on the line. I'm going to bring him on right now, and feel free to debate between the two of you. I don't have any problem with that. Let me bring on Mike. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, Russ.
Listen, thank you so much on short notice for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it, my friend.
No, it's fine. Looking forward to talking about a game and maybe the bigger picture as well, and see what we get out of it.
Absolutely. Listen, if that bleeds through, you feel a need to talk about the bigger picture, certainly bring that up, Mike. I do want to mention something to everyone who's listening. Please do go to Viva El Fulham and check out a really good article that Mike just wrote. I would highly recommend it. Mike, it was a great take on substitutions with Kit Simons. I would highly recommend everyone checking that out. Good job, my friend.
Yeah, cheers. It's something that comes up all the time, and I wanted to have a look at it to see whether he had been changing the way he does them. And, it's not massive changes, but it does look as if he's learning to bring people on earlier, and the subs he's actually made, the results are more positive than negative, so it sort of came out in his favour once I'd done all the data.
Well, what's interesting, again, and this is one of the reasons why I recommend supporters definitely checking out all of Mike's articles, but this one in particular, you know, he does a nice little comparison with graphs. I would highly recommend checking out Mike's latest article about substitutions with Kit Simons. It's very interesting, and you can make your own judgment, but Mike does bring up some interesting points in this article, so definitely check that out. All right, guys, enough talking about substitutions. I'm sure that will come up during our show today as well, but let's talk about this disappointing result for Fulham in the FA Cup against Sunderland. I was disappointed. Honestly, I watched back the entire thing this morning, and it was disappointing to watch. So obviously, with the two of you being there, it had to be even more disappointing. So, David, I'm going to start with you. Just share with me your opening thoughts on what you watched on Tuesday night.
Well, it was disappointing because I think it's a match that, you know, we could have won. The way we went about it at the Stadium of Light, in the main, we controlled the game. And I think with a little bit more shrewdness up there, we could have finished it off. So you've got to be confident, you know, to get the game back home in front of your own fans. But I don't think he set us up right from the start. That was a big problem. That was number one for me, the problem. We weren't set up right from the start. But I suppose in some ways the bigger problem was that you could see it wasn't right. We were getting overrun in the midfield. To be honest with you, you know, to go in one night, 1-0 up at half-time was brilliant for us. So it was totally unjustified, really, and I hate to say that, but it was. And second half, it was the same, it was sort of, you know, it was just a matter of time when Sunderland were going to score, really, to be honest with you. And the fact that nothing was done to correct it was what upset me even more, I think. It's fine that you pick a team you think you can do well with. And whether it's, you know, whether I agree with it or you agree with it or anyone agrees with it, you know, the manager picks a team he thinks he's going to do well to win the match. And sometimes you're right, sometimes you're not. But when it doesn't work, and it's clearly not working, and for me it clearly wasn't working, the fact that he failed to rectify it and didn't make subs until literally the 80th minute, you know, that was a really disappointing thing. Because, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, and yes, the bigger picture is the league, but in the smaller scale of things, the bigger picture is that we have a very winnable tie in the next round for both teams, of course, and then a quarter final place. And I think you've got to try and grasp a bit of cup glory when you can, because the opportunity doesn't come around. We talked about this before, you know. The chances of getting to another European final must be probably remote in all our lifetimes. But, you know, the cup final even, you know, we've had one cup final in my lifetime. We may not get another one. And this was a better chance for us, I suppose. And that's what disappoints us. Sure, the league is important, but I think we could have done a lot better. So it was very, very disappointing because, in the end, Sunderland, it was too easy for them. And we made it too easy for them. And we didn't sort of try and change it or stop it.
No, listen, very interesting to you, David, and I certainly want to dig down a little deeper on this match while we go through it. You know, again, actually what Sunderland did compared to what Fulham did and how Fulham reacted or didn't react to it. You know, again, definitely want to get into more details on that. Mike, I want to get just your opening thoughts on what you watched. Was it similar to David or was it different?
No, I mean, it was similar to David. I mean, you know, we both made the trek up to Sunderland and saw a good performance, and we were disappointed to come away with just a draw. So, you know, there was hope that, you know, we'd be able to get the win. But, no, I mean, whatever way you dress it up, whether, you want to defend it or, you know, have a go at him, it wasn't a good performance overall. And we did go in at half-time, you know, very lucky to be 1-0 up. And you just felt second half, you know, if we could hold on, nick a second, you know, that would be it. But I think while we didn't set up correctly, you know, or there were certainly odd things going on out there, you have to give it to Sunderland a little bit as well. I mean, they from the kickoff, they were right. They showed much more commitment than they did up at the Stadium of Light. And, you know, they showed their qualities as well. And they never really allowed us to get going in that first half hour. I mean, the last 15 minutes of the first half, we improved a little bit. But, you know, Sunderland played well. A lot of our players definitely had off days. I mean, Tunnicliffe went from man of the match possibly up at Sunderland to very, very poor. And so it was a frustrating game, and we didn't put on the performance for the fans who turned up on a bitterly cold night. And it was disappointing. It's a chance missed to go through to the next round. But in the end, Sunderland are the Premier League side. They are the ones with all the experience in that game, and we can talk about that later.
Right.
But what disappointed me is the reaction of the fans. And I think what's happened is we had non-existent window, basically, where everyone was unhappy because we didn't sign anyone, no matter who it was, you know, we didn't sign anyone. And that coupled with a poor display and going out of the cup has just created a perfect storm where it's now time to write off the season and write off the manager. And that's what frustrated me immediately after the game, was the reaction of fans, both in the ground and on, you know, the forum and on Twitter.
You know what, Mike? Honestly, I saw a good amount of it. And just to be honest with you, on our show tomorrow, David and I will be tackling one of those subjects because, again, I saw so much of this. I thought, you know what, we're going to talk about it. I put it on the Cutters Talk Facebook page, basically asking the question about Kit Simons. You know, again, you know, I saw so much of the kid out, so I'm going to ask the question. You know, I'm posing it to everyone. You know, should Fulham consider Kit being out now or wait to the end of the season before you make a judgment? And I know I have my views on it. David has his views. I'm sure you have yours, but I want to give everyone their chance because I saw so much of it. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to throw it up there. Let's see what people say. And then I'll share it during the show tomorrow. And, you know, it should be interesting because I've already checked some of the comments, Mike, and they're, you know, again, they're all over the place. You know, they're for or against or whatever. But again, I'm glad that you brought this back to something that makes a good amount of sense. The January transfer window, I think, is a factor here. And I also posed a question about the January transfer window as well, because I think that's part of some of the some of the bad feelings, you know, again, with the match, with Kit right now, you know, the result. I think that is a factor. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mike. That's a very good point. But before I go to David, I want to go back to you on Sunderland, because you mentioned they were more committed this time. I believe they also changed their formation. I just want to ask you, how much do you think that made a difference in this match? You there, Mike? Did I lose you, Mike? David, are you still there with me?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay. It looks like I lost Mike for a second. Let me try to get him back on. Mike, are you back with me?
Yes, I am, Russ. My Wi-Fi dropped off for a second there. So.
That's okay. That's okay. No big deal, my friend. I just wanted to get your thoughts because, again, you brought up a very good point. You know, sometimes we forget that Fulham playing another team, you know, and they're out there trying to win as well. And they are a Premier League side, and you were talking about commitment. But I also want to ask you, again, about the change of formation that Gus Poyet went from this time around, from the other time around, when I believe he went three in the back. How much of a factor do you think his change of formation had on this match?
Well, it definitely did, because, like I say, from the kickoff, they were right on top of us. We played the same formation. And so he's changed it to counteract us, and he's obviously seen a weakness, which I think a few teams have seen with us. And, we struggled to get forward and keep the ball. And, that's partly down to the players. But, they were battling hard, and they're an experienced team. You look at the team that Sunderland put out, and, I think the youngest player was 24, and, tons of appearances between them all, and they just showed that much more experience and on how to take the kids on. And some of our guys looked as if they were rabbits in headlights at times, just not knowing
right.
what to do, who to pass the ball to. And generally a bad night for us, but a good night for Sunderland. I think Sunderland fans would look at that and see, that's the kind of play they want from their side. And yeah, it was definitely the change made a difference, and we struggled to get wide, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring that up to you. David, I want to ask you about the same subject as well, because they were right on top of us, and Sean Davis must have said this at least a half a dozen times, talking about if we could, their forward just right on top of us, and if we could just get the ball out wide, we could get past them, we could have some room there to possibly counter them and, on the counterattack. But they were so much on top of Fulham that, I go back to what Mike just said. Did it feel like the players, were like shell-shocked a little bit? They were so much under pressure. I'm curious your thoughts on how Sunderland played Fulham in this match.
For me, the problem was that our setup didn't suit the situation and that we weren't able to do what we could do. We were very, very narrow. We was playing with a very right-footed guy, basically, in Fofana on the left of the midfield three, and Kakalicic, who's a very left-footed player, on the right of a midfield three. And then the two strikers centrally with McCormack in the hole behind them. So we were very narrow there. I mean, we was as narrow, if not more narrow. Probably more narrow than when we played the diamond, because at least when we play the diamond, typically, we have LVC as the sort of right central midfielder, and he does
like
to go out wide. And because we were under pressure all the time, our fullbacks didn't have the opportunity to get forward so much to offer us any width there. It was all just coming through the middle. That was the problem. I want to say all through the middle. I mean, Staff Leedis did have a bit of, he had a little bit of work to do there with their kind of guy. But there was so much through the middle. We were weak through the middle. And I don't think the Sunderland formation was particularly difficult. It was just that... that Kit didn't adapt. Really, he could have adapted it in the first half. He could have adapted it certainly at half time. And for me, that would be my main complaint, that we got to half time ahead. He should have made the change then, really. We've seen so many other managers doing it to us, making a change at half time and putting things right and becoming out a stronger side. But he didn't. And that was a problem for me, because it clearly just was not working. I mean... And I don't want to pick on individual players too much. I mean, I know Mike's already said that Tunnicliffe wasn't very good. But then the system didn't help Tunnicliffe, because he was part of, you know, a strong central three up at the Stadium of Light, but he had Fofana and Kakanicic alongside him, and, you know, that was nowhere near as strong as we were. And I guess also, I mean, for Sunderland, I don't know. I mean, the three at the back means that to going four at the back meant that actually gave them an extra man in midfield, I suppose you would say, really, looking
right.
at it like that.
Right,
in
exactly.
midfield. And that's why we needed to have that extra man in central midfield as well. And, you know, that would have had to be done by sacrificing one of the strikers, pushing McCormack forward and pushing Kakanicic forward, or just removing Kakanicic and putting LVC on or something like that. That was the obvious move. And, you know, that's a team I said we should start with, and that's a team that we should have been playing with. It was just too much work. You cannot rely on Alex Kakanicic to do these things in central midfield, do the graft. He's not that kind of player. And that's where the problem was really for me. And he was next to Tynecliffe.
Okay.
Tynecliffe was trying to cover for him. Fofana, if anything, was tending to play out a little bit more wide. It was really Kaká and Tynecliffe were very central. And it just the fact I wasn't concerned about the Sunderland lineup, not particularly. When I saw that they didn't have people like, you know, Johnson and Katamo, and, you know, Conor Wickham got injured in the warm up as well, I wasn't that concerned by them. I think that we had enough overall to deal with it, but it's just the way we were set up.
Okay. Listen, these are valid points, David, and watching it back, you know, like I did this morning, you know, I could see everything that you guys are talking about. It's pretty obvious, and you guys are there because you really get to see it in more detail, but I could definitely see it even in the replay, the issues that Fulham were having, and that's why I wanted to go a little bit deeper and talk about how they were set up compared to how we were set up, and you pretty much have broken that down. Let's take this and really talk about the starting 11, because it sounds like you have issues with Kakanicic playing and also possibly Fofana playing because of, you know, again, to help out Tynecliffe. So just share with me your thoughts overall on the starting 11, and, you know, and then, of course, you got Ross McCormack in his role. So talk about it all.
Well, for me, this is the annoying thing. The starting 11 was only one player wrong, as far as I'm concerned, or one position wrong. Because I said on the preview show, exact 10 out of that starting 11, I picked it. The one that I didn't pick was Corley Woodrow, because I had McCormack playing as a striker next to Roddy Egger. And I had Kakanicic in the cam role, and I had LVC playing in that right central midfield role. That's the only difference that there was, that one
right.
player. But by Kit doing what he did, and this is what's annoyed me about Kit, because we had all these weeks of McCormack playing in the cam, and there's been this pressure to get him back forward. We're getting back forward as a striker. He scores a hat-trick, and then he goes and puts him back in the cam role again. That's really, you know, mind-boggling, and this is why I'm thinking, hold on a minute, and this is why I've started to sort of listen to what Yanis has been moaning about and saying, well, hold on a minute, this guy's not learning. You know, he corrected one thing that didn't work, and then he's gone back to it again. But the Kakanicic, that's the real strange one for me, because we,
okay.
you know, we know that he tends to play as a left midfielder. We've seen him in the cam, and he's looked promising in the cam. But in central midfield, which, you know, requires a lot of defensive strength, no, definitely not. It was a very, very bad move. It was not working. You know, and I like Alex. I get on with him. I talk with him quite often. But it's not his position there. He got dispossessed in there. It reminds me of the time when Martin Yole picked Brian Ruiz to play in central midfield against Wigan. And that was a disaster
okay.
as well, because it's not their job. These are attacking flair players. They need to be in attacking flair positions, not in grafting positions. And that was the problem. And it just did not work. And really, even first half, he should have looked to change it. But certainly at half time, he could have, like, you know, he was talking about giving LBC a break. He wasn't injured, but he was talking about giving him a break, bring him on at half time instead of either Kaká or one of the strikers. And then, obviously, Hugo, I guess, would have stayed on because he'd scored a goal. So maybe Corley Woodrow. To me, he didn't have a very good first half. I know he does a lot of hard work, but he was expendable for the scheme of the bigger things. Should have been LVC at half-time and you know, Shaw is up in the midfield. And, you know, we might have come away with something. So, but it was just, that's the annoying thing. It was one player. Only one player off being what I thought would be a good lineup, and that's the really frustrating part about it.
Well, David, it's one player, but it's a change of positions. You know, again, because we're going back to Ross McCormack. You know, I hear what you're saying about one player, but I could see why you're frustrated. When I saw the lineup, you know, again, it went a little bit different than what you and I had talked about, you know, the day before. You know, and again, it's about playing Ross McCormack, Colly Woodrow, and Rodiega together. You know, again, I think that maybe it should be Rodiega or Colly Woodrow. That's the way I look at it with McCormack up front. But again, I see where you're going. I want to go to you, Mike. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11. Are you feeling the same way as David, or are you thinking differently about the starting 11?
Well, I think everyone agreed when they saw the 11. I mean, you know, I can be called a Simons apologist or whatever, but the actual 11 picks, I mean, and the formation is what I tweeted as soon as I saw it. Yeah, so Kaká's going to go on one of the sides, and Fofana, you know, be left or right. I think Fofana, he prefers to be on the left. That's where he's tended to produce his best performances. But, yeah, Kaká, without a doubt, is not a player who should be playing on that sort of right or even left side
right.
of the three midfielders. You know, Tunnicliffe in the middle, we were happy with. Fofana playing, everyone's happy with. So, totally agree with David. You know, 10 out of the 11, that's fine. I think the thing what we have to look at is why Simon's had to pick that team. And, you know, it's probably going to bring up the transfer window and why we haven't brought anyone in or why people have left. But if you take his comments about LVC and not wanting to push him too much, and we've raised this before, you know, he's had a hamstring injury, came back too quickly, we've got him back in the side, but hamstrings, and David will know this, they can, you know, if you've had one, they're always there lingering in the background initially. So to rest him made perfect sense. But then you look at the rest of the squad, or the squad he's got left after Monday night and the window. The question is, who else could he play in that midfield three? Now, you sort of think, well, Kavanagh's done a good job there, but he's not fully fit yet from his injury.
He's injured, so.
Yeah. So, you know, you're not going to play Roberts there, nor Williams. So I think he felt he wanted the experience of Kaká to go in that position, which of course meant no one's going to play in that cam role. So that will have to be McCormack. I mean, my own preference is he should have found a way to go 4-4-2. I mean, I've always said that he's going to go back to that.
At some point, right. You've always said that, Mike.
I have, yeah, and I'm still feel he's going to do it, and I don't know whether he's just being a stubborn in you know, he's being criticised for not doing it or criticised for having the diamond or the 4-3-1-2, whatever way you want to look at it.
Right.
And maybe part of him is, well, I'm going to play it. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, David will remember Paul Bracewell when he was manager, and he always played 5-3-2, I think it was. And he got criticised constantly, change it, and he never, and he did get to a point where he just felt he's doing it just to spite us all. now, I don't think it's reached that point, but, yeah, I'm a little bit frustrated he never went to four in the middle. But that's why I think Kaká was there. He looked at his squad and he just felt, that's the only player I can put in that position if I'm going to rest LVC. If the whole intention
right.
was I'm going to rest LVC, then the team we saw was probably the best he could do if he's going to play that formation. So that's the excuse, if you like, that I would give. Now, I would agree that it didn't work. And, you know, McCormack, God, if he touched the ball 10 times in the first half, I'd be quite amazed. So he was lost. And that all goes back to how Sunderland were playing as well. So,
right. You know, again, it's, you know, I hear where David's talking about it, you know, focusing more on form, but again, you also can't forget about the team that you're playing against and you know, and how they were set up. That's why I wanted to bring that up, Mike, and you bring up some great points. You know, it's funny. I now, while you're talking about this, like, you know, again, I'm thinking, okay, maybe the rationale was Kaká because he wanted to rest LVC. That kind of makes sense. You might be onto something there. But I still go back to is, you know, again, you're trying to play this system, but then I go to what you just said. Well, why aren't you thinking about possibly going to a 4-4-2 or going to something else, trying something else? Why are you constantly now sticking with something with players that, you know, again, Kaká, that's not going to be his strongest role, strongest place to play. If you're hell-bent on getting him in, why not go to a 4-4-2 and change everything? You know, again, if you want him in now, you know, and really change things up. But, you know, again, I could see where you're going Mike. It's a little frustrating because I think you're really nailing why he did what he did. But I, you know, it didn't work. So again, I go back to this, and David has already mentioned that, and I know that you get criticized for backing Kip, but I'm just curious, would you have made changes somewhere during the match instead of in the 80th minute?
We got away with it up to halftime and then a little bit after, but I would have certainly changed it coming out second half. I would have gone to a flat four, and I was thinking, well, it could stick McCormick on one of the wings, I suppose, and you know, we could have tried to be a bit solid like that coming out second half. But again, that's not the answer. I mean, to be fair, he started, you know, he obviously went for the game. I mean, up at Sunderland, we have to remember, McCormick didn't start, Hugo never started, Kaká never started. So, you know, and he got criticised for that. You know, I've seen people say, you know, they were there for the taking up at Sunderland. So you can't win sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, there is a criticism to be had at Simons that actually during the game the formations don't change. I think I can probably recall two changes of real formation in all the time he's been manager. And, you know, some managers like to make lots of changes during the game and they get called tinkermen. And then there's others who, I remember a conversation that I had with one manager in the past who said, that's my 11, I put them out. That's their job, and they should do it as they've been trained. And, you know, if I have to put one player in one of their places, they'll do the same job. So it is a criticism of him that he's probably not reacting and making changes, but we were 1-0 up, and so you can sort of understand the argument, I'm not going to make a change. So, but yeah, I mean, going back to the starting lineup, I certainly think if it's the LBC and Ruiz leaving or not leaving, we never know. And just looking at the players available, I think that sticking with the diamond, that was his only option.
No, listen, I definitely see where you're going on that. You know, it does make sense, Mike, after you explained exactly about the Kaká situation with LVC. It definitely makes sense. You know, and I see, you know, very good analysis by both of you on the starting 11. All right, let's move on. Let's get into this match, and I'll just start off by saying that basically, and you guys were both there, that Sunderland really controlled the play for, I would say, you could say the whole first half, but, well, not really. I mean, Fulham actually, late in the half, really started to get a little bit of control, but the first 25 minutes, I would say, Sunderland were really, really controlling the game, but again, Fulham actually got the lead, and David, I'm going to go to you. Let's talk about the goal by Hugo in the 28th minute, which came off of a corner, and it was, you know, I believe it was struck by Colley Woodrow, but eventually Hugo, in a little bit of a scrum, got the goal. Just talk about this.
It was a corner taken on the on our left side, left wing, from Cormack, and there was a big groan because it looked like it was an awful corner. Didn't get any height, trickled along the ground literally, and sometimes these ones just by hook or by crook turn out to be really dangerous. It's gone through like legs at the near post. I think someone's kind of flicked it on, almost back-heeled it at the near post, and it's fallen almost to Woodrow on the line, and he's been blocked or hit the bar or something with it. I don't know what he's done with it, but it's then come straight out to Hugo, who was about a yard behind him, and he's smashed it into the roof of the net. So from what looked like it being an awful corner, it actually turned out to be a great corner for us, and that was, you know, really one of our first, I think it was our first corner actually, but
it was
certainly one of our first real kind of attacking moves. I mean, because as you said, for the first 25 minutes or so, really it was all the other end, and Bettinelli had already kept us in it with some good saves and things.
He did.
And they'd look really dangerous. So it was a real, you know, a real kick in the guts for those guys to get the goal. But, you know, it was, I thought maybe, you know, we're going to get lucky here. It's going to be our night after all.
You know what? You know, it's funny. Getting a goal like that, you probably do feel like it's going to be our day. And I do apologize because I did write down to mention this. So I'll mention this before I go back to you, Mike. That before we did score the goal, Marcus Bettinelli actually made two key saves. You know, again, really kept us, you know, kept it, you know, kept it goalless at that point. So he really did his job against Jordy Gomez, and I believe tipped it wide on a Fletcher shot. So he was definitely doing his job, but we'll talk about Marcus Bettinelli a little bit later, unfortunately. But, Mike, I'm going to go to you. And Dave and I were talking offline. The one thing for me about referees, as long as it's called both ways, you know, as long as you, if you're going to call something, call both ways, I don't have a problem with a referee. And the reason why I'm prefacing this, because I'm going to talk about a situation in the 32nd minute. Ross McCormack goes down in the box from a challenge from Alvarez. Now, I looked at this. It's difficult to tell from the angle that I saw on the replay. I'm curious if you got a good look at this, and what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Okay, I'm going to be a little bit controversial here. I'll be honest, at the time, I wasn't 100% sure from where I sit whether it was a penalty or not. My feeling was that it possibly wasn't. I haven't seen a replay, I'll be honest, so I can't comment on, you know, on what that shows. The problem with McCormack now, and I don't know if David agrees with me, is he is tending to be a bit theatrical in going down. He does get a rough treatment. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And he got a couple of hard tackles the other day. But he seems to be going down quite easy at times. And he's done it a lot over the games recently. And I think that's part of his temperament. He gets frustrated and he sees it as a possibly an easy option. I don't like saying this, but, you know, it's something that's beginning to grate. And I had some people near me the other day commenting about it as well and telling him to get up. And he is beginning to make a meal of some of the tackles he's getting. And, you know, he stays on the floor, remonstrates with the ref. And it's not doing him any favours. And, you know, maybe he has that kind of reputation from his Leeds days, last couple of years. But it's something I'd like him to stop doing. And, yeah, if you get fouled, you get fouled. But don't try looking for stuff like that.
I totally agree with you, Mike. And, listen, it's difficult for me to judge. You know, again, watching the replay, I couldn't get a good view. I'm going to be honest with you. So I can't make a full judgment. Again, from so far away, the shot that they give you on the replay, you know, it's too difficult to call. But I hear what you're saying. I personally don't like players that go down easily. So, if you're feeling that way, then I would agree with you on that, because I don't like that if that's what your feeling's going on. I really like Ross McCormack as a player. You know, again, if this is something that you're thinking that he's doing, I wish he wouldn't do it because, you know he's a very good player. He doesn't need to do it. That's just the way I look at it. But again, it's, you know, for me to judge this particular situation, again, there just wasn't a clear view for me. So obviously there wasn't either for you. But again, just keep this in mind when we get later on into the match. And David, you know, again, now that we're talking about McCormack, I'm going to go right back to you, because he had a decent opportunity 20 yards away. And, you know, again, it just went wide. What are your thoughts about this opportunity from Ross McCormack?
Well, if you don't mind me adding my two pennies very quickly. There was actually an earlier incident involving Alex Kakanicic, and I thought he was lucky to escape a yellow card, because I thought he really absolutely did throw himself to the ground looking for a penalty, and the ref just told him to get up. But I thought that was definite simulations. I don't know if kind of the ref's back was up by that, but I saw the McCormack thing from a long way away, obviously, but I wasn't convinced at the time it was a penalty, and after seeing the replay, I'm still not convinced. And if you're not convinced as a referee, you don't give it. That's the rules, if you're not sure. But then, you know, moving on to the other one, we had a reasonable passage of play, actually, there, and he got into a good shooting position, and he hit it fairly well, but he dragged it a bit wide. He's kind of just dragged it a bit past the near post. And we've seen, you know, he can hit the ball, Ross, from that sort of range. Obviously, the Huddersfield one especially springs to mind, I think. And so perhaps it would have been nice if he could have hit the target, because, you know, had we got another goal, that really would have been a kick in the teeth for those guys. So it was one of our rare kind of, you know, reasonable passing exchanges, if I remember rightly, that one, culminating in the shot that Ross had. But apart from that, I can't think of too much else in the first half, really.
You know, and that's why I want to bring that up, David, because around that period of time, that, you know, Fulham actually did have some decent possession. But beyond that, you know, again, like you're saying, it was mostly Sunderland. And, So that's why I wanted to highlight that opportunity, because, again, there were far and few between. But as the first half went on, Fulham did get a little bit stronger. So now let's go to the second half, and Mike, I'm going to go back to you, because unfortunately for Fulham, Sunderland came out strong once again like they did in the first half and really controlled the play. You know, and again, watching back again this morning, I thought they were going to score earlier than they did. But an unfortunate situation happened. Again, we're going to go right to this, Mike. I'm going to talk about the own goal, and we'll want to get your thoughts on this from Marcus Bettinelli in the 60th minute. The unfortunate part of this, obviously, is giving up the goal. But again, all of the comments that I've gotten from fans from everywhere about this, I was tweeted about this, you know, again, from teams that don't even follow Fulham, don't even follow the championship, telling me, questioning this goalkeeper. And I'm here to tell you that Marcus Bettinelli is going to be a quality goalkeeper. This was not a fine moment for him, but hopefully he will learn from this and we can move on from it. But again, we do have to talk about the own goal, Mike. So share with me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, it was incredibly unlucky. I had quite a good angle at it from where I was sitting. And, the bloke's on the left side, puts a cross in, or a low shot almost, and it spins up off the defender's leg, goes really high looping ball. And, if it was a sunny day, I don't know, you could argue he lost it in the sun and misjudged it. But he just got his hands on it and it popped out. And he stepped back over the line, and then the ball went with it. And it was, immediately he knew it was a goal. I lined straight at the linesman, and his flag went up. So, yeah, really, really frustrating. I mean, his handling's been pretty good recently. We all know his shot stopping's good. But what pleased me was the reaction of every player almost. You know, certainly Hutchinson and Bodroff, the closest to him, you know, told him to pick himself up, and you could see Rodallega.
Yeah,
you could see Rodallega telling him to, you know, not worry about it. And to a man, you know, they know how important he's been this season. And it's one mistake, you know, and goalkeepers do that, and David will know. And, it was just unlucky. Let him back in the game. Like you say, I mean, straight after half time, we were virtually pinned in our own half for 10 minutes. And
absolutely.
If we could have just held on a bit more longer, but it really gave them a buzz. And although the players sort of backed up Bettinelli, you could also see, you know, their heads drop a little bit on a couple of them. You know, very close to me on my side, almost a sort of resignation that, oh God, you know, we've let in a goal and they're on top of us and we're not going to get... And, it just set the tone for the rest of the half, really, to be honest. And, frustrating, but he picked himself up, and he is going to be a good goalkeeper. And, the vast majority, 99.9% of the fans, you know, can forgive him that, I think.
Yeah, you know, and that's why I wanted to talk about this a little bit, because, again, I didn't see any of this from Fulham supporters. I saw this from supporters of other teams just commenting and contacting me. And I'm like, you know what? You don't know anything about this goalkeeper. He made a mistake. It's a very bad mistake. It's one mistake. He'll learn from it. Okay, that's the way I looked at it. And and I'm glad that you mentioned, Mike, the support that he got from his teammates. It's very important. You know, again, it's really important that he knows that they have his back and he has theirs, and we move on. It's a mistake. We move on. And that's exactly what Fulham did. You know, again, like you said, it probably did affect them throughout the rest of the half, unfortunately. But, you know, again, they tried to move on. And, David, that's going to lead me to go right back to you because, again, Fulham actually had a decent chance to score. I got a funny feeling, you know. You know how I always have Ross McCormack is scoring goals? I think I'm going to change that to Seiko Fofana. I think he's going to score a goal soon. But unfortunately, he did not score one in this match, but he had an opportunity in the 73rd minute. Share me your thoughts on this.
God, I'm trying to remember it now. It was so rare the ball came down that end. I should be able to remember it easily, shouldn't I? What did he do?
Yes.
Remind me.
Yes, you should remember.
I don't, you
73rd
know, I
minute,
I,
David.
I think I was busy tweeting horrible things about Kit at that point, and...
Oh, okay.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention. Let me have a think. What did he do? Of course, he tried to take the whole team on, and he nearly got through, didn't he? Yeah, he did one of those runs where he's So I was trying to think of this wonderful shot he had, but no, he never actually got as far as having a shot, did he? No, he just he did a run, and he's looked, you know, he's looked good doing that, running at people. He just seemed to scare defenders, and he had some good closest control for a big guy, and. Yeah, he's got through a few players, and he wasn't very far going through them all, and it would have been a wonderful goal, but unfortunately, I think, you know, just on the edge of the box, he kind of got blocked off, and so I don't know what other options were on for him. At that point, it was pretty tight around him, so it would be hard for him to release it, so it was kind of shit or bust, if I can say that. He had to get through or nothing,
yep.
So unfortunately, he didn't get through, but it was quite an exciting run, nevertheless.
Yeah, it was, David. It was, you know, again, a decent opportunity for Seiko Fofana, and, you know, again, at that point, it's still 1-1. Unfortunately for Fulham, 3 minutes later, Mike, I'm going to go to you, is the goal by Alvarez. And, again, what's interesting about this, and watching back, and I watched it back a few times, Sean Davis just said, you know what, Alvarez, is, you know, again, you know he's going to shoot with his left foot. He's going to do what he can to shoot with his left foot. So I'm going to ask you here, do you think the defender who was right there, I can't remember exactly who it was, should have been a little bit tighter with him and forced him to the other side? Do you blame the defense on this goal, or do you just call this a good goal by Alvarez?
Well, it was certainly a good shot, and again, you can't blame Bettinelli for that. I tried looking at it to see whether there was actually a deflection off of Bodaroff slightly, but it doesn't look like there was. But there were four players between him and the goal. I mean, there was Stafelidis, Fofana, Tunnicliffe, and then Bodaroff between, you know, in front of the shots. Fofana and Stafelidis didn't deal with him well. Fofana should have been on his left foot trying to block that, and Tunnicliffe should have been in a bit quicker as well. So it was a combination of, you know, certainly two, if not three players not doing their job on him and just giving him too much space in the box. And with that left foot of his, you can't allow him to do that. And
Yeah,
so soon after the other goal as well, and that's pretty much curtains, really. Couldn't see us coming back from that. And but yeah, you know, it's frustrating, but it was a good shot, and you know, he hit it at decent height with a lot of speed, and like I say, keeper had no chance, but we should have closed him down more in the box, closing down, and that's one of our problems all season, and if not for a couple of years now, you know, we're just not closing down players enough. You look at other teams and they're right on top of people, and you know, we're not doing that. We're fairly okay outside the box, a few blocks here and there, but once they're inside, you know, we're failing a little bit.
No, that's a very good thing that you just mentioned there, very good observation, I should say, and break that down, Mike, because again, you know, you would think that they'd be tighter on him, but again, he had enough room and space to get it on his left foot, and he scored a very nice goal. I have to give it to the Sunderland player. It was really a nice goal, and there was nothing Bettinelli could do. And like you said, it was lights out at that point. Unfortunate, but it was lights out. But we do have to talk about one other thing, because Fulham really, you know, again, there really wasn't much. You know, from that point on, obviously they tried to get that equalizer, but really to no avail. But unfortunately, I'm going to talk about an incident in stoppage time. And, David, I want to get your thoughts on this because, again, Danny Graham goes down in the box, and they get a penalty for this. And I've watched this a few times. I want to get your thoughts on it first. The ref actually pointed to the spot, and then, of course, Jordi Gomez scores, and the game ends 3-1. Did you get a good view at this, David, or were you just too far away to get a view on this penalty?
Well, I had exactly the same view, really, as I did for the McCormick incident, because they were both kind of a similar part of the box, really. And I wasn't convinced about the McCormick, and I wasn't convinced about this, and I've looked at it again on the replay, and I'm not convinced either. So, for me, you don't give the McCormick one, you don't give this one. It's simple.
Exactly.
As a ref, that's what upsets you about refs. That's when refs, people start pointing fingers at refs and accusing them of bias. And I saw that the other night, you know, favoritism for Premier League teams, blah, blah, blah. But to be honest with you, although I didn't like the way the ref handled some of the match, I think apart from that thing, I can't complain that much. I mean, yes, he missed the handbags. He didn't really get that dealt with very well. There were a few funny decisions, but really, it wasn't such an awful performance. You know, when he came out of the ground on Twitter, everyone was blaming the ref that I saw. Everyone was blaming the ref, and I'm saying, no, it's not. You can't blame the ref for that. You know, blame the players, blame Kit, but, you know, blame other things. Blame Sunderland for being better, but, I don't think the ref cost us a match, although, you know, if we'd had a penalty there at that situation and gone to 2-0 up, it could have been a different matter, but I didn't think it was a penalty for McCormack, and I didn't think the other one was a penalty. So, in that respect, had he not given the penalty, which is, I think, should have been the right call and the fair call, the match would have ended 2-1, I guess. I don't think we would have got back in it. So I don't think it really had any bearing on the match. Not as if, you know, people were talking as if the ref had cost us a match. You know, watch the game, for God's sake. We haven't had the stats yet, but I'm sure the stats are going to show it's one-way traffic as well. Stats don't always lie, and I don't think the stats will lie today. So that was a bad decision by the ref in my book, but I don't think it was a game-changer at that stage.
It wasn't a game-changer, David. The game was pretty much decided at that point, you know, again, seriously. But the only thing I ask from a referee is, if you're going to call it one way, call it the other way. Call it the same for both sides. That's all I'm going to say. You nailed it, because, again, if you're not going to call it on McCormack, and it really was a similar situation to me, I've watched them both, then why are you calling it on the Graham situation? That's my only point on this. The ref wasn't the reason why Fulham lost. Sunderland were the reason Fulham lost. End of story. Sunderland were the, you know, again, listen, you can blame the Fulham players, you can blame Kit, but you also have to give credit to Sunderland. They won the match. They were the better team. They deserved it. And you know what? Stats are going to back that up. And let's go right into Stat Attack. And I'll just read these to you guys fairly quickly. Possession. This one's very interesting. Sunderland had 60% to 40%. Their total shots, they had 17, Fulham only had 9. On target, they had 7, Fulham had 3. Shooting accuracy, they were at 41%, Fulham were at 33%. Fouls were even at 10. They had 13 corners. Let me say that again. 13 corners, Fulham only had 4. Crosses, they had 31, Fulham had 20. All right, Mike, what stands out to you the most in Stat Attack?
Well, certainly the possession. You know, we haven't faced a team which has had the ball that much, and that really goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where we, you know, we were a bit disjointed, we couldn't pass the ball, and we couldn't keep hold of it. And so, you know, to let another team have 60% of the ball, you know, you're going to struggle, especially against a Premier League side with, you know, some of the players they had. So for me, it was the possession. You know, at home, you've got to be doing better than that. And, you know, the other one is the crosses, really. You know, I'm surprised we hit 20, to be honest. I'm not sure where they came from. But yeah, 31 crosses against you. I mean, it shows, you know, they were very wide and they were getting the ball in the box. And, you know, they're getting past our midfielders and leaving Stafelidis and Grimmer to deal with, you know, these crosses. And the way our full-backs play, you know, they need to be a bit closer to the centre-backs, and that allows these crosses in. So, you know, it's a continuing problem, really, not only against Sunderland, but, you know, almost every game we play against teams that are wide. So, yeah, the possession and the crosses for me, it just sums up the game. We couldn't keep hold of the ball, really.
You know what? And this is a match where possession really shows itself. You know, because again, they really, like you mentioned, Mike, they really controlled the play. You know, and again, you could say, you know, overall, you know, I know it's 60-40 possession, but if you want to talk about dominance, I'd say it's much higher than that. Just in talking about who was more dominating over the course of the match, I think it definitely would be Sunderland. And you know, again, they deserve to win the match. I hate to put it that way. I'm a Fulham supporter, but I have to call it like I watched it back today, and I listened to it as well. They were the better team, and they are the Premier League team. They showed their quality this time. I don't think they showed it as much last time. So again, it is what it is. You know, they get the victory here, and it's, you know, again, it's unfortunate because I'm not against us going on a cup run, but you know, and like David was saying, you know. Mike, honestly, you know, one time in my lifetime, I'd love to see Fulham get to Wembley for the FA Cup. I'd love to see that once in my life. You know, I'd love to see that. I'll come over for that. I definitely will come over for that. But it just wasn't in the cards. We had the opportunity last year. Look what happened against Sheffield United. You know, again, it's not always in the cards. It wasn't in the cards again this year, even though it would have been an opportunity to play Bradford. Sorry about that. All right, I'm just waiting for David to dial back in. Hopefully David will be dialing back in soon, because I wanted to get his view on the stats, but I can always ask him again later. So Mike, while we wait for David, why don't we get right into rating the players, and let's start from the beginning. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. Give me a rating for Marcus Bettinelli.
I'm going to give Bettinelli a 6. He did make the mistake. He did let him back in the side, but he still made a number of good saves. But with the mistake, it wasn't to the standard that he's had in previous games. So probably the lowest mark I've given him all season, to be honest. So, yes, 6 out of 10.
Okay. How much does that go down, Mike, to the own goal? I mean, is that weighing in a great deal besides that?
To be honest, it's probably 2 marks off because of the saves he made, or maybe 1.5 marks. You know, I would certainly have been looking at 7.5, 8 for him because of the saves he made. He did a couple of dodgy kicks as well, but I think that was down to, you know, just after him making that mistake. But you still can't fault him for those point-blank saves he's making and the command of the box. But, yeah, one mistake, you're going to get marked down.
No, I hear you on that. All right, looks like David's back. David, we are talking about Marcus Bettinelli, so rate the Fulham goalkeeper.
Well, he did have some, you know, great saves, as Mike was just, I heard him saying, but I've only given him a 5. And that's because the mistake he made was, you know, very elementary, unfortunately. No goalkeeper should make a mistake like that. I mean, not at any level. And he knows that. And I'm not going to criticise him more than that because he's been fantastic for us and he's so much better than you know, the alternative. But 5 out of 10 because he blotted his copybook with that. And also, I think, you know, I partly blame him on the second goal as well because he's tried to do one of his quick balls out. And it's not gone where he really wanted to. And it's gone, it's hit Alex Kakaniklic, which I also blame partly. He didn't control it very well. And from that's led directly to their second goal. We've lost possession straight away, and they've gone for their second goal. So, you know, on that occasion, Bettinelli's kick let us down, but the first one, obviously. So it's a 5, but, you know, I don't want to criticise him because it's a one-off. I don't think we'll be seeing mistakes like that again from him.
Okay, and I agree with you on that, David. You know, again, that's why I wanted just to preface it when we were talk about Bettinelli giving up the own goal. That again, it was like you said, it's a one off. I don't expect us to be seeing that again from him. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about the fullbacks, David. Jack Grimmer and Kostas Stafoulidis. Give me ratings for both.
I'll have to be careful, Mike's one again, won't I? I thought Grimmer did okay, actually. I thought he did. You know, I thought he was probably one of the better ones in a way because a lot of it came through the middle. There was one occasion he got turned too easily, however, in the first half, I remember. But in the main, he was okay. But I don't think it was more than that because he didn't really get a chance to get forward that much or help create because just the way the situation was, we were under so much pressure. So for me, I'm just going to stick to a 6 for him. Stafoulidis, he had a lot of, in the first half, he had a lot of pressure as well. It wasn't really his fault. It was just the way that they were playing. He's up against that guy. I would probably be giving him a 6 as well, but I'm disappointed the way that the guy wasn't closed down for their second goal. He did hit it well, but he had a free shot from about 15 yards. And if you have a free shot from 15 yards and can hit it that well, you're going to score, and he should have been closed down before. So I'm also going to give Stafoulidis a 5.
Okay, very good there. Very good there, David. Over to you, Mike.
Pretty much the same, actually. I mean, it was good to see Grimmer actually get some positive comments, you know, both in the crowd and from online. So first half, I thought he was really good. Second half, you know, he's right in front of me, and there wasn't actually an awful lot of action down that side. I mean, it was, you know, first goal did come from there. But I thought he did his job well, but I'm going to give him a 6 as well. Stafelidis, first half he was isolated a lot on his own. He did well, and I think we have to remember, you know, under a lot of pressure, the defenders, they did well for that first, you know, 45 minutes, keeping everyone out with not a lot of help from their midfield. So he could have done better, as I said earlier, on the second goal as well. And again, I'm going to mark him down possibly for that. So 5.5 for Stafelidis.
Okay, very good. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. Let's talk about the center back two of Sean Hutchinson and Nikolai Bodarov.
Okay, well, I'm going to give them both a 6 as well. They did their job again, but actually, no, I'm going to change it. I'm going to give Hutchinson a five out of 10 because silly booking. He seems to be the one player who, if there's a dispute with the ref, he's the one to go and make the comments and go up to him, and he got himself booked for the penalty. And so frustration again showing, and centre-backs, they need to be on the ball and calm all the time for me, and he just lost it a couple of times in that game. But, yeah, 5. And Bodarov, although he did give away the penalty, was it a penalty? Certainly everyone in H-block and JH stand stood up and couldn't believe it was given. So I'm not going to mark him down for that. So I'm going to give him a 6.
Okay, very good. David, over to you.
It must be a northeast thing with Hutchinson, because Dan Byrne before him was constantly haranguing the ref as well when he was playing and getting himself booked a few times for dissent, if I remember rightly. So must be something in the water up there, I think. Actually, I kind of agree with Mike, but I'm out of the two, if anything, I was very impressed with Hutchinson, because I thought he has been getting stronger and stronger. And I watched, there was, you know, a time when, you know, he was up against Jermaine Defoe, and he opened his leg up, so to speak, and he's there. You know, he's no slouch, particularly Hutchinson, which is good. So for me, yes, and bookings are annoying, but I think both of them 6 out of 10 for me. They both had solid games without being spectacular.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, David, let's go back here. I'm going right back to you. Let's talk about the midfield and think about how to do this. So why don't we do it this way? I'll just give you Ryan Tunnicliffe on just by himself. Just rate Ryan Tunnicliffe, and then we'll go through this.
Well, I think he had a lot of stick, Ryan Tunnicliffe, and some of it was unfair because he was under a lot of pressure. You know, without having that, you know, that the LVC alongside him on one side, I think that was the big problem. As I said before, Fofana tended to drift out to the left more, whereas it was Tunnicliffe was left in the middle with Kakalicic for sort of help, really. So I think that some of the criticism is very unfair. I don't think he was awful. No worse than anyone else, certainly. So for me, I'm going to give him a 5.5.
Okay. It's funny because I got messages from Emilio telling me how poor he was. So I am curious your thoughts on it. You don't think you thought he wasn't great, but you didn't think he was as poor as being portrayed. Is that correct, David?
No, I think it was the system, and the fact that he didn't have enough support there, was he had too much to do on his own, really.
Okay. So for you, it was really the lack of support, I guess you could say, is the best way to describe it. All right, Mike, over to you on Ryan Tunnicliffe.
Yeah, so Tunnicliffe, after we picked him all up after his appearance at Sunderland, playing in Parker's role, thinking, you know, he's the one who can play in that centre position, sit, keep the ball moving. He kept the ball moving. It just kept going to a Sunderland player, and that was the problem, especially in the first half. And I think he sums up the situation we're in with the squad. You know, he's come back. We look at Tunnicliffe as, if you like, more experienced player than some of the other players. But he's 22 and he's only played 60 games. You know, he's nowhere near experienced. So he's going to have that inconsistency. So we gave him an 8 last week at Sunderland. And but this week, his passing was poor and he was very... he had the ball, he wasn't too sure what to do with it. Maybe Dave's right, you know, with Kaká there and not LVC, he felt he had to cover too much space. But in the end, you have the ball, and he should be able to. He should have done better with it, and he very disappointing for me, especially as I had high hopes for him in that Parker position. I'm sure he's going to play there again, and I'm sure he'll give a better performance. And he will improve. But I'm only going to give him a 4. I thought he was very poor.
Okay. So you're really, you're going a little bit farther than this than David did. You thought it was really poor, and really nailed the passing in the first half is one of the major reasons why you feel that way. Not a problem. You know, David and you were usually aren't that far apart. This is one that you were a little far. I think David, you give him a 5.5, right?
Yeah, no, I know what Mike's saying, but I think it was he was really in the firing line, and I think I kind of put it down to sort of other things, the fact that he was under too much pressure. I think.
Okay. Not a problem, David. Not a problem. All right, Mike. Right back to you. What's rate Seiko Fofana and Alex Kacheniklic?
Okay, Fofana. Well, he showed the good and the bad. Some of his runs in the second half, especially one of them, which took him from inside our own box all the way up to the 18-yard line with players either side. Is he going to shoot? What's he going to do? And he loses it. And he did that a couple of times. But he shows he has that ability. He covers a lot of ground very quickly with the ball. And when he first arrived, he would lose that ball on the second or third kick. And his control is getting a bit better once he's in his stride. So it's falling into place slowly with him. And I was pleased with his second half performance. First half, not so much. But I'm going to give him a 5.5.
5.5.
He still wasn't, doing his defensive duties enough, and he just needs to improve in that area for me and his final pass. But 5.5, considering what I'm marking everyone else, he was average.
Okay, and Kaká.
Kaká, the little boy lost. He really was, and I felt sorry for him. He's not that central midfielder or inside right player at all. I hate him on the right anyway. In the free roll, fine. I'm comfortable with that. But defensively, he wasn't good enough. And Dave mentioned the tackle early on where he could have potentially got himself booked or even sent off. I'm only going to give him a 5. I didn't think he did much at all really in the game.
Okay, fantastic. David, over to you.
Well, Kaká, the same, 5 for me. There was a couple of times he burst forward, he looked half exciting, but the majority of his game required him to be disciplined and defensive, and that's not his game, and he was lost at it. And there was one where he got dispossessed, if it was Brian Ruiz, we'd have all been having a field day about it, but it was Kaká, and he got dispossessed, and he went straight on the attack from that, could have scored. So for the second goal, the ball came out to him difficultly, maybe a bit from Bettinelli, but still, he lost it straight away and they went up and scored again. So he threw himself down in the box, in my opinion, tried to get a penalty. Even someone behind me was shouting, ref, book him. They were that. I don't think, if you think someone has really deliberately died, I think most honest football fans would be disgusted by that. You want to see your team win fair and square. You don't want to be cheating and stuff, and you don't like that sort of thing. So it's a shame for Kaká, but really is not his role there. He has to be somewhere where there's less defensive duties. And even when he plays left midfield, like a 4-4-2, he's not always much used defensively, unfortunately. But at least he's less of an issue there. In the middle, it left too much to do for the others. Finally, I thought again there were promising signs. As I say, we had that run. A couple of times he looked very dangerous. He is looking a bit more composed on the ball. Doesn't always make the right choices, perhaps. Got withdrawn. I don't know if he was going to be withdrawn anyway. He wouldn't have been my choice to withdraw him. I would have taken off, say, Kaká or someone else to bring LVC on. But perhaps that was just because of the spat that happened. Kit decided to take him off because I think he has got a little bit of a fiery temper, perhaps. But I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because I thought there was good and bad, but overall it averaged out to an okay performance.
Okay, very good there, David. Hey, David, you're coming in a little bit rough. You want to try dialing in again? I know you're having problems dialing in before.
Yeah, no, if you want, that's fine, yeah.
Yeah, what's give that another shot, and I'll go over to Mike. All right, Mike. Normally, you know, again, for some reason, I decided I was going to do Ryan Tunnicliff by himself. But what I'll do is I'm going to give you Ross McCormack, Colly Woodrow, and Hugo Rodriguez together. So just finish off the last three of the starting 11.
It's quite difficult, actually, because hardly any service from anywhere. And, Hugo scored, but McCormack was invisible first half.
Yeah.
Woodrow, he probably the best player out of the three on the night. He worked hard. He's held up the ball a few times, done some good turns and runs. I'll give Woodrow a six. No, I'll give him a 6.5. Woodrow, actually, I thought he was probably our best player on the night. Certainly the most calmest with the ball. And Hugo, I will give a 5.2. And McCormack, I'll give him a 5 because it's not his fault, I suppose, that he's playing in that role.
Yeah.
But again, you know, he has the skill. He should have been influencing the game a bit more when he had the ball. And also, I've got to mark him down for what I think is at least twice where he went down very easy looking for free kicks when, you know, he should really have played on. So, yeah, 5 for McCormack, 5 for Hugo, who got the goal. At least he's got a goal and, ended that run. And even if it was from 1 yard, and even he could have missed that one. But, yeah, he worked hard. But, again, the service to him wasn't very good. But, as I say, Woodrow, I thought his touch was better and he looked more comfortable up front. It's going to be interesting to see if, you know, he keeps him in for Saturday. I would think he deserves to. But again, it's, you know, who's that second striker? Who's going to play that? Because we don't want to see. It has to be McCormack. You know,
it has to be McCormack, Mike.
This whole
situation, you know, if there's one thing that's frustrating me with Kit right now, it's where he's playing McCormack. Okay, it's very frustrating. It really is. You know it. I know it. David knows it. We all know it. He should be playing up front. I know what he's trying to do. I get why he's got him in that cam role. He can play the cam role. But again, put your best players in the best position to succeed. It's up front. It's up front. It's frustrating.
I think if we had another striker who was a top-notch, you know, let's say we had Rhodes. So if you had Rhodes up front and Woodrow and you had McCormack behind, then that would probably make more sense. Because Rhodes is much more of a goal scorer, and, you know, McCormack would be looking to feed him. I mean, I know lots of people talk about Smith at the moment and those various things, but looking at the players we actually have available, you know, those three, that it's per many two from those three at the moment. Dembele's a good sub to have on. You know, I like him. Just keep giving him a bit more time here and there. But, yeah, as we are, McCormack's got to play up front. But with another proven goal scorer, I wouldn't feel so bad about it because I'd be looking at McCormack being able to feed someone like Rhodes in. But, at the moment, it just makes no sense. I'd rather he went to played Roberts or Williams and played proper wingers and left McCormack up front. He's got to be there.
You really want that 4-4-2. I can see, Mike, you really want him to go back to... because everything goes back. It's like, yeah, I can play Williams on one side, Roberts. I see where you're going. I'm not against you on that. Trust me, I'm actually not against you on that. Maybe we will see that down the road. You know, again, it's also part of the situation with Kit growing as a manager and adjusting. And you know, this is one of these matches where I can look back and say, I wish he adjusted a little bit more. And you know, again, this is one of these matches where it definitely scratches my, you know, makes me scratch my head. All right, David, over to you on the final 3-2 to rate in the starting 11.
Well, Mike, I'm sorry about this, but if we had Jordan Rhodes, I would ditch Hugo and I'd ditch Corley and I'd play Rhodes and McCormack up front together because I think that would be a much more deadly combination again. But and I said that the other night, actually. I said, you know, when we were talking about our strikers, because both Corley and Hugo, they have good points and bad points, but they're not complete players. They both missed too many chances. And if we had a proven goal scorer up there, I'd play him and McCormack. As it goes, I thought Crawley had a poor first half, actually. I thought he really didn't like get involved very well, and some of his touches are out. I know he tries hard and works hard, but you know, you could say, well, maybe he should have scored that goal that Hugo put in. And for me, certainly at half-time, Crawley would have been the one I'd have taken off, because I wasn't impressed with what he did, and we needed to make a change. We needed to make the change to bring LVC on, and that would have been the one I would have sacrificed to put McCormack up front and Cathy Hitchinson to Cam. Second half, well, I don't know if he was any better or not. The service wasn't really there for him, but I'm going to give him a 5 out of 10. In the same respect, Hugo didn't really have the service, but, you know, he did get the goal. And on that alone, I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because he got a goal. I know he couldn't miss it, not really. And he tried, but it just didn't work for him. McCormack, very frustrating, does some great stuff. He's a busy player, he's always involved. He never goes hiding, McCormack. You've got to give him credit for that. There are players who do hide sometimes and don't get involved, but he doesn't. He tries to control the play, he tries to get involved, but it is annoying the way he goes down sometimes. There's been a couple of theatrical falls, and maybe that did cost him in that penalty. Perhaps so. He was wasted, you know, because we were struggling. He wasn't able to get forward enough to do what he does. You know, we've got two strikers in front of him, and they're out of the game because they're not getting the service. And he's not really getting the service because he's relying on Kakalexic to win the ball in midfield. It was a ridiculous situation. So I'm going to give him 5 out of 10 as well.
Okay. Fair enough there, Dave. Fair enough from both of you. All right. It's time to move over to Kit. This should be interesting. Michael, start with you. Let's rate the full manager.
Oh, thanks for coming to me first. I don't really know. I'm going to give him a 5. It's an average, you know. I mean, I think I know what he tried to do with the lineup. He could have made some changes earlier in second half, and you know, when they were on top, to try and take the game back to them a little bit more. But I think his hands were tied with the players he actually had available. But you know, I can only give him a 5 on Tuesday's performance.
Okay. All right, David, go ahead.
This is easy. This is the easiest one of the lot, actually. And Yanis, I do hope you're listening. And Kit, I hope you're listening too, because I'm giving you a big fat 0, Kit. I think.
Whoa! You're going to give him a 0?
I'm going to give him a 0. He got the lineup wrong. Picking Kakalicic to central midfield was a bad idea. Had he got away with it, it would be slightly different, but it wasn't working, and it clearly wasn't working. And he had the whole match to make a change, and he did not make a change. At half-time, yeah, even Mike agrees on this one. You know, I think he should have made the change. He got away with the first half, and he didn't. And that's very, very poor. Shockingly poor. You know, we were overrun the whole game. It was only a matter of time before they scored, and he did nothing. The substitutes were so late. What the hell was he doing, you know? What the hell was he doing? You know, for me, he's thrown it away completely. And I blame him because he's the one that picked the team, and he's the one that didn't make the changes.
Were his hands tied, though?
No, because if you're going to pick that team, don't put Kakalic in central midfield. Play the 4-4-2 then, like Mike was saying. Rejig it. Play the two bigger guys central midfield with Kakalic on one side and someone else on the other side. But don't rely on Kaka in the middle to be winning the balls. It wasn't working. Fine. If he changed it at half-time or changed it at some point earlier that could have had a bearing on the match, I would be marking up and saying, okay, he realised he's made a mistake and he's changed it. But he didn't. It's like pig-headedness for me. It was almost pig-headedness that he just thought he could actually succeed with this, and it just was not working. So I'm sorry that, you know, absolute 0. And that's why I was so angry with him the other night. I was completely angry with him. And this is why I can understand people are getting angry with him, because it was, you know, and Mike knows it wasn't working. Everyone knows it wasn't working. You've watched the match, Russ. You know it wasn't working.
I know it wasn't working. It's obvious it wasn't working. I'm not going to disagree with you that. I just think you're being a little harsh giving him a 0. But okay, David.
On this one, I'm absolutely right for once. I'm not normally always right, not like people think, but this one I'm right. Had he made the changes and it still failed, I would have given him credit for making the changes. But he didn't even try. That's what hurts so much. He didn't even try to make the changes until it was too late. 0 out of 10,
okay.
I'm sorry, mate.
Okay. Listen, you're entitled to your opinion, David. All right. Let's move on from that rating of Kit, and let's go over to Sunderland, David. I'll let you take a first shot at Sunderland.
Well, I'm going to give them 7 out of 10 because I think they were good. I don't think they were brilliant. I think we made them brilliant. We allowed them to play far too easily, much too easily. But they were good, nevertheless. They came, and to give them credit, they came from the start to play the game and try to win the game. But they weren't fantastic. They were manageable, and I think with the right system, we could have managed them, and we didn't. So 7 for them, a good mark, but not the best team I've seen.
Okay. All right. Fair enough there. Over to you, Mike, on Sunderland.
Yeah, I'm going to give him an 8, actually. I think Poyet, he changed his formation. They, put out a very, very strong team, and they were up for it from straight off. I take Dave's point that, maybe we made it a bit easy for them, but, they were clearly above our standard and certainly showed more commitment than they did in their home game. And so, yeah, I'm going to give him an 8, and, Poyet, he did well. And
okay.
I mean, I have to go back on David. How you can give a manager 0, I don't know, because we were leading at half time. Yes, it wasn't going well, but we were leading, and like I say, I've given the reason why he put that team out possibly, and he's shown faith in him. Yes, he could have made changes, and that's why I marked him down. But to give 0, I mean, that's just not respecting the person.
Wow, very strong there, Mike. And David, I'm going to lean towards Mike on this because I think 0 is harsh, and Giannis and you might be on similar wavelength on this match, but I don't know what Giannis would. I don't know if Giannis would go 0, but I think 0 is just too harsh.
No, he's failed to make the changes when changes are needed. That is, for me, was very, very poor. And yes, it does sound harsh, but I was just so angry with it. And and it's not disrespecting the manager. I'm not disrespecting him as a person, but I'm disrespecting his acumen on this one, because we know we got it wrong. The fact that what worries me, I guess, is that he didn't know he got it wrong. That's what. And we saw it with Martin Jarl. We've seen other managers in the past coming out with all sorts of excuses about why we didn't perform. And, put the blame as far away as themselves they can. He picked the team, he picked the formation, it didn't work. If he really doesn't realise it wasn't working, then he really isn't the man for the job. That's what I'm going to say. And these are the things that, I want the guys who are listening to debate on the Facebook thing that we can talk about tomorrow.
Yeah. We'll talk about that tomorrow, David, because I've got thoughts on Kit as well. I'll share with them tomorrow, again about being a manager and growing as a manager. I have my own thoughts, so we'll definitely, trust me, we're going to talk a good amount about Kit tomorrow. Let's move on from Kit now, and let's now talk about, David, let's talk about the ref. You said besides the situations with the penalty, you thought he was solid, so give me a grade, give me a rating for the ref.
Well, I don't think he's as bad as everyone made out. According to Twitter, after the match, it was the ref's reason that we lost the game. It wasn't the ref's reason we lost the game, but I'm giving him 5 out of 10 because, you have to be consistent, and you cannot give the penalty to Sunderland and not the penalty to Fulham. They were both either penalties or they both weren't penalties. You can't give one but not the other. They were very, very similar. And, he's lost a good couple of marks for that. Perhaps he could have dealt with the spat with Fofana better. Technically, the Sunderland player should have seen red because he's put his hand in Fofana's face. But I guess he didn't see it, and if it hasn't been seen, I don't know, but then if you're guessing, who knows what happened there. But 5 out of 10, it wasn't as bad as people said, but the consistency wasn't there.
Okay. Over to you, Mike.
I'll give him a 4, actually. There wasn't any consistency, and he could have given them a penalty. He could have given us one. When both instances probably didn't deserve one. There was a tackle on McCormick, although I've had a go at him diving, which was pretty poor, which deserved probably a certainly a yellow or a red, and he missed Kaká as well. And then there was the handbags when he's standing right next to the bloke who puts his hands on Fofana's face, how he missed that. I just felt he lost control. He wanted the game to end just as quickly as possible because he realised he was having a bad night, and his linesman never helped him either. So I thought he was very poor, to be honest. He showed no control of the game. So 4 out of 10 for me.
Okay. Very good by both of you on the ref. All right. You know what? When Fulham lose, you know, it's difficult to talk about man of the match, but let's try to here. I'm just curious your thoughts. So, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. If you had to give a man of the match to one individual, who would you give it to?
Well, I've looked at the marks I've given, and I don't work them out before we do it. I sort of just go with the flow, and it seems that I've given Woodrow man of the match, but I can't really give it to him. For me, the player who had the most solid game was Grimmer, so I'm going to give it to him mainly for his first half performance. And but I'm struggling with other players. You know, no one in midfield deserved it. No one up front deserved it. Bettinelli made the mistake, so although he made saves, can you really give it to him? So, for me, Grimmer or Bodrov, maybe Grimmer just sneaks it for me.
But interesting.
Very low bar. It's a very low bar.
Right. I get that, Mike. That's why I wanted to preface it. You know, this is one of these matches where you really have to think about it. So that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up. Okay, David, I heard you chuckling. So who would you give man of the match to?
That was just the irony that Mike gave it to Grimmer. That was all. And I'm not disagreeing with it necessarily, because on my ratings, it would have been Grimmer, Bodiroff, Hutchinson or Fofana, but I gave them all the highest marks. Actually, Hugo as well. I don't think I can give it to Hugo because although he did score the goal, he didn't really do enough else. I am actually tempted to give it to Fofana in a way because he has been a bright spark in some ways, but then again, I don't know. Maybe I should give it to Hutchinson for obviously calling the ref a name and getting a yellow card because maybe the ref deserved it. So not that we should condone, obviously, lack of respect for referees on cottage talk. That would be very bad, because we should be showing them respect. As you know, Mike, we play football at the grassroots level, and getting new referees into the game is very, very difficult because of the lack of respect that refs get shown. So I shouldn't condone that either. So I think I should abstain from that. I don't think really I can justify a man of the match on that performance for Fulham.
Okay, not a problem, Dave. You don't have to give a man of the match. It's fine. Okay, we have a few minutes before we wrap up the show. And, Mike, while we were talking during the show, I wanted to ask you, it came up, you know, I was thinking about a certain player who's been injured. I want to get your thoughts on him because I know how you talk about, you know, formations and everything. Where does Sean Kavanagh fit into Fulham's plans? I'm curious your thoughts because, again, I think he's grown as a player in a short period of time as he's played with Fulham, not to the level that Wasse Vigen Christensen has grown. But I've seen potential from him. I'm curious your thoughts on Sean Kavanagh.
Okay, yeah. So he, when he first got in the team, he looks very small, very light, and got absolutely slaughtered at Derby, as they've said many times. And he doesn't look strong enough to be a left back. Then he got injured, and then come back, and he does look a slightly different player. And you know, he's played in front of Staffolidis a couple of times. Got a good cross, takes possibly the best corner in the club from what we've seen this year. So
absolutely, that's part of the reason why I wanted to bring that up. I think he does that very well.
Yeah, I don't see him as a sort of left-sided attacking player. I know he did score a goal earlier in the season, but he's very much there to double up with the left back and give support there, which is something we all complain that our fullbacks aren't getting. So, you know, probably that's his role for the rest of the season, to fit in just in front of Staffolidis in certain games. But I know the club rates him highly. I know Hugh Jennings rates him very highly, and that's why they've given him an extension. And I think they are earmarking him for the left-back role long-term. So, be interested to see if once he's fully fit, whether he takes over from Staffolidis, because we're not sure whether that's going to be made permanent, and we do need to start thinking about next year. If Staffolidis is not going to stay, then let's play the player you possibly will be in that position, you know, going forward. I know there's 18 games left, but we really do need to start planning ahead. I'm not concerned about relegation, so, you know, we're going to pick up the results. So, yeah, I mean, long-term, that's what the club think. I really do feel they, you know, next year he's probably going to be our left-back or certainly, you know, first alternative. But we're going to see a lot of him, I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Mike, I'm hoping from, say, this year to next year he puts on a little weight, you know, again, to help him play left-back. You know, just gets a little bigger. And I think he could really do a job. But again, it's early days, you know. Again, but the reason why I asked you because I was curious your thoughts going back in between the midfield and over to left back, and you think long term it's left back, and I can see why you're going with that. I just, you know, again, I just think down the road, I think he just needs to put on a little weight. I think he could be fine there. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show. We'll wrap up a little early. David, as always, I look forward to doing the show with you tomorrow. You did a great job today.
Thanks very much. Yeah, bonus one for me tomorrow. I didn't think I was on, but making a comeback tomorrow, which would be good. We can talk about these things. I hope we can get this show plugged so people can listen to this and then listen to what Mike and I have to say and, you know, make a reasoned debate for the kick question on Facebook and obviously the other one as well, which would be exciting to see what people have to say. And Mike, thanks for coming on as well, because I think it's important. If I was to have a bit of a rant about Kit, that you were here to offer a bit of silence as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not black and white, is it, Mike? I'm not saying Kit should go now, and you're not saying that he's the best manager ever. I think there's somewhere in between. We have to find the middle ground. And, you know, all pulled together as a team, as a club, and as a fan base, hopefully, Mike. So that's good, but good to talk to you again, as always, and Russ, of course, as well, yeah?
Very good there, David. And Mike, seriously, thank you so much for joining us last minute for this show. And you know, and David's right. You gave a little balance to the situation. You know, David's talking about Kit. And we're going to go into more detail tomorrow about Kit. And, you know, because, again, it's a huge topic. And I put it up on the Facebook page. And I've already seen a ton of comments on it. It's fine, because I want to talk about it. You know, again, I wanted Kit as a manager, just so you know. That will kind of tell you where I'm leaning towards when we talk about the subject, but I wanted him as the manager, so I'm more apt to give him more time. We'll just, you know, again, that just kind of gives you an idea where I'm going on that and grow as a manager. That's just me. But David, we will talk about it in more detail tomorrow. All right, Mike, again, thank you very much, my friend. You are welcome anytime you can come on.
Yeah, no problem. I will be listening tomorrow. I don't do Facebook, but I think you're pretty sure where I'm coming from. All I'd say to people is look at the bigger picture. Look to see why he's in place. Look at the squad. You know, he knows those players. There will be changes in the summer. There will be players coming in, I'm pretty sure. But you will have to get used to the bulk of the squad being these youngsters, certainly over the next 18 months. And I believe Kit's the right person for it.
Okay, fantastic. Great, great commentary there, Mike. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show. I do want to mention before we go that you can listen to Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app. You can now listen to it. It's a great way to listen to it. On the TuneIn app, you can get it at any store for your mobile device. You know, definitely download the TuneIn app, and that's a great way to listen to Cottage Talk. It's there. You know, again, you can go back and listen to almost every show we've ever done. So there are about 200 episodes there. It's fantastic. All right. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Have a good night.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Mike.
Right.
Cheers, Mike.
Cheers,
Mike. David.
Cheers. Out of the cover.